Social impact everywhere.
Welcome back, my fellow social impactors, to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast. And today we have another special guest for you. We have Peter Frampton, who is the executive director of the Learning Enrichment Foundation. And they're an organization weaving settlement support, employment supports, language training, skills training, and social enterprises where people can practice their skills. And so I first want to start this podcast off by saying, Peter, thanks for being here with me today.
Oh, you're more than welcome. This will be fun.
Oh, I'm excited. We talked a little bit about it before, but I'm going to ask that first question that you like the phrase with. And the first question I have for you is, explain a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Well, here's the fun thing. I'm not a social impactor.
Oh, okay. Tell me why.
Because I don't think any one person can be. Our work is in community, and we work with community. And it's the wit that matters. And the social impact is coming from community. So really, what I do at LEF and what we all do collectively is lay a foundation and be a place where that can be nurtured and can happen. So I'm leery of this encroaching cult of the individual into social transformation space, because one sees it go badly more times than well. The key ingredient for the work is humility and believing in the skills and the abilities of others and holding the collective over the individual. So here at LEF, people have a chance to come and grow personally and interact and learn about community needs and connect with the community in a way that reinforces this part of the city of Toronto's sort of down-to-earth, let's just get her done kind of attitude, which has been enormously fun to work with for years and years. Let me just say it another way. I was asked at a meeting once where they said, you know, who feels they know everything they need to know about social innovation and who feels that they, you know, have a lot to learn. So for fun, I just stood on the end that said, I know everything there is to know about social innovation. But the reason I said that is because I work in community and the answers are always in community, not because Peter Frampton has a clue.
That is a fascinating insight. Huh.
Keep going. Yeah, no, so I think the question for us all is what are we doing and how are we doing in our work that allows people to come together and collectively engage in people-centered change?
Well, I'm just processing because it's something that I've thought about for a long time too. And from my perspective, I'm trying to, lead the charge, let's say, or create a space for human-based skills like empathy and collaboration and community to be at the forefront of what we do. And that's everything you're talking about. That is the community connectedness that is more important than the individual.
Well, as Kierkegaard liked to talk about, right, that probably in truth is usually found in paradox. So there is that delicate balance of leading and listening, of giving direction and following, and all these things have to be held in a balance for it to actually happen, right? So I think as long as we're good at embracing paradox in our work, and perhaps even in our roles to some extent, then we can move things forward in remarkable ways.
So I have a follow-up question for you then. We're going to jump into the second question, if that's all right.
Please.
Because now that we talked about, the importance of community and how it's a collective versus an individual and how, Peter Frampton might not know, but someone in the community does. I'm going to flip it back. How are you then making a positive impact in that community?
So it's interesting because as an organization, we're now 500 staff. Over half of what we do is work in childcare, so people can work without worry. But that's laying a foundation of resilience that is absolutely essential for the next generation. So that's our long-term impact work is in childcare, is in getting kids out in the woods, not on a planned tour, but on their own tour of discovery. Some of the things many of us took for granted growing up that people just haven't had a chance to experience. Those are the building blocks of resilience that are essential to the world. So you start by building the citizens of tomorrow. You're then in relationship with parents and centers where you can, in their busy lives, help keep them informed about the activities and initiatives and things that are going on in community, and make it easier for them to engage should they be interested. And then on the employment side, what gets you a job is that first 30 seconds in the interview, right? It's the smile, it's the posture, it's the confidence. And the skills matter, but that comes later in the conversation. And so finding ways for individuals who are looking for employment to take on leadership roles in the community actually has a far greater impact in them finding a job than any of the skills training we could do, right? So that whole self-esteem piece is an important part of it. So we weave that through everything. And then, the challenge is to support staff in doing that, which means you're going to make mistakes and not everything's going to work. A solid sense of humor and a good sense of fun gets you through the day allows others to create that environment.
I mean, the two things you said that are so true and something that are quite close to my heart is you talked about things we took for granted back then, right? Or things in our childhood. And one that's not commonplace anymore is outdoor education, right? We don't, youth today don't have as much outdoor education as I might have when I was a child. And those skills that you learn in that environment are incredibly intuitive and they lead you the rest of your lives. So I couldn't agree more that when we have these skills that we have, an outdoor world, they lead us down a good path. And then making mistakes, like you have to, it's a part of learning. It is the continuum of learning and outcomes. You have to fail.
Yep. The question is, can you do it without hurting anyone?
Yeah. There's the conversation of like little F fails, which are the little tiny ones, and then big F fails. You want to avoid big F fails.
but the reality is you can, and as you say, you don't learn much from getting it right.
Yeah.
As you move forward, so it's an exciting environment to try and create and nurture, and we've done that through a lot of. Leadership training through the Social Enterprise Academy in Scotland, and their whole paradigm is that the answer's in the room, and so once you've discovered the answer, then you learn the theory that backs it up, and that's actually been really impactful for people to have the confidence to lead in that quiet and gentle fashion that I believe has the most impact.
I love what Scotland's doing just on a international level, and then also what they do just within Scotland. There's a gentleman I know who works for Buy Social Canada, and they're a social procurement company, but he worked for the Scottish government for a long time, and they have social enterprise embedded into everything they do. It's incredible. I think they're a huge staple of what we should be doing through, shift government and looking at companies that look at holistic success, right, as opposed to just profit.
I agree. When you translate their language into Canada, social enterprise would read nonprofit. So they've actually determined that the nonprofit sector should be a pillar of their economy within 10 years. Well, the nonprofit sector in Ontario is larger than construction and automotive combined.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And 50% or more of the revenue, and I can say it's more because I know how they did the stats, is fee for service. So we're already part of the economy. And I think if you want to ensure they're not buyouts, ensure local, then it's actually the obvious way to invest. I've actually been down to Mars for one of their impact days and listened to the guy who was pitching his business, using social impact to grow the business in the hopes that it would be bought out within 7 years. And that business case won. And I have to say, that's disgusting to me. That donated tax dollars would go to that kind of use makes no sense. We need things to be embedded in community and to stay in community, I think.
Yeah, it's a challenge I have too with, you know, maybe this is just my own bias and opinion, but the Canadian dream of making, you know, growing a small enterprise into a medium enterprise and then selling it to a larger enterprise. And yeah, it kind of defeats what everything that you know, morally guides me, because I want to build something that's sustainable to a point that it is embedded into a community or an initiative. And then whether I'm leading the charge or not, it needs to stay, not be bought out and then white labeled and changed. That it doesn't make sense to me either.
Well, and our economy actually relies on small business and small nonprofits. To what? Tune of about 80%?
Yeah, it's absurd how many there are. And it's also a good thing, though. It's incredible that, you know, the backbone of the economy is all the small to medium-sized businesses.
So exactly. And so here we are, the backbone of the economy, and yet the talk, the push, and the policy is all towards bigger and better. And we don't really have too many examples of bigger being better. I mean, some things have to be in order to happen, but and they come front of mind, but clearly it's the smaller that's driving everything. So, you know, small is beautiful. When we work with clients around starting up a business, in the old days, you'd try and find the person with the strong entrepreneurial spirit that would end up hiring five people. And you'd go through 250 people to find 15 to 20 to engage in the program. When we turn that paradigm upside down and say, hey, can we help you augment your income by $500 a month? Suddenly, virtually every business idea is doable and makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of fascinating dynamic change to me, right? And then that's putting power into people's hands, a sense of being an entrepreneur, sense of pride, and that has a complete and total ripple effect.
So I want to jump into the next question now. And the next question actually is about business. So I think it's a great segue. But the question I have is this idea of social impact. Do you believe it's an important part of business?
I'm more curious about when it didn't become important.
Okay, I'm listening.
I don't have the answer to the question, but it's fascinating. You know, 50 years ago, that really wouldn't have been a question. You looked after your employees, you lived in community, you worked in community. Back in the days when people went to church, you went to church with some people who owned the company with you and other people who worked at the company. So there was a whole different set of assumptions around what a business was and what its purpose was and how it worked, right? I mean, Ford wanted to make sure all his employees could afford a Ford, which is sort of one of the typical ones one goes back to. So I don't think you can separate the two. I do ponder and wonder if what's changed in the world is that capital doesn't reside locally anymore, and it has no ties to a community the way it used to. Not sure where Amazon would say its community ties were to, but we knew that Massey Ferguson was very much embedded, although an international firm, very much a Toronto firm and Brantford. So there's a shift in ethos that comes when your capital has no tentacles and connection to community. And I suspect that's where things have become a bit disconnected and dangerous over the last two decades. So to answer your question. as long as you're employing people, there is a moral obligation to work with people fairly, to treat them fairly, and allow them to be who they should be, and to be the one that owns the business and owns the capital, and not have some sort of moral connection and understanding is a complete anathema to me, right? So I think they're absolutely connected. What's fascinating is that we have to rediscover that they're connected.
Well, and that's the one thing that I've come to realize, even, you know, at my young age, is that's what's the missing link now. It's not so much that social enterprise was never a part of it, because I would agree with you that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was very much just always there. It was always a connection. But what changed is now that there is, you know, the international push, now that there is, you know, a globalization, the larger business and more money, we've lost sight of the purpose and mission of a company, but we've also lost sight of the connectedness that business has to its roots. So I think those two things are driving forces that have really changed. And without those two things, it's very easy to forget that businesses need to make a social impact. It just becomes a little bit convoluted and confusing. And I think that's where this question came from my mind, was that, you know, I want people to rediscover that it is and always has been, but more than ever, we need it now.
I agree, but I worry that we've lost we've lost the ability to organize and have a rational conversation. So if you want to actually have maximum impact, social impact, you change the tax structure in the country. And if you rolled the tax structure back 20, 25 years, the rich would be taxed more and the poor would be taxed less, and there would be better income distribution. So as we have this conversation and we talk about sort of the reigniting of the integration of social into business, I worry that it's a distraction to the things that would have the most impact. It comes from an assumption that you can't have broader systems change, and that there seems to be a lack of recognition that we've been through massive systems change that hasn't worked for the ordinary person. So I'm always fascinated that the social enterprise world spends very little time talking about policy, broader policy, that would have more impact than what it is they're trying to achieve on their own. So it's sort of a fascinating and frustrating dichotomy.
It is, and just from the work that I do and the work that I see, it is changing. It's slow. And that realization that government has a part in building, you know, a social enterprise economy or a purposeful business economy, it is happening. You know, an example is by Social Canada. They're from Vancouver, and what they do is they look at social procurement policies on government levels and institutions and all of these things. So that conversation on policy is happening. It's just, it needs to be faster and it needs to have more people who are the big players and you know, Canada and other countries having that conversation. And I'm hopeful it will. But I do agree with you that dichotomy is interesting and also frustrating. It really is.
we need to be having conversations around income tax changes and guaranteed minimum income. And
yeah.
As one recognizes that, 50% of workers in Toronto are in precarious work right now.
Yep. When
you're in precarious work and you're looking for the next contract or weaving together the three part-time jobs, that's the very moment you don't have the time to engage in broader community discussion and change. And so we're seeing all these pressure points come together. And the speed with which they're coming together is really quite alarming. We've been able to sort of spot the trend. First trend we spotted was the poverty of time. Poverty of money has always existed. And then naturally, of course, and we've all seen it now, the stagnation of wages. But it's been going on for two decades. And there's a breaking point at some point.
Yeah, it's too long. 20 years is too long. People always say the government is slow and it takes a while. And sure, you know, systemically it does. However, we have seen government move quick. So it is possible. And 20 years is too long.
So maybe social innovation and social innovating isn't really innovation. It's just people coming together and having these conversations, becoming comfortable in those conversations, realizing that it's not radical, it's not new, and then being able to ask for it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the innovation starts with podcasts and conversations like this. I guess we just call it innovation now, but it's really just allowing time for people to reflect and not feel foolish or out of place with what they know to be true. And that's very, very simple and unbelievably powerful.
So it's how we're built, right? No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And you're pulling these thoughts right from my head. So I love that. No, that's great. That's helpful. He's less talking for me. But I want to jump into the last question. And the last question I have for you really is about your advice. And so the question is, what's your advice for other people to begin making an impact in their own communities?
It is the little day-to-day actions that cumulatively matter more than the big ideas. Big ideas are important. It's something that can galvanize people and bring people together. But it's in those interactions, in the respect for each other, in taking the time to listen, in creating the space and sharing a meal where possible, that the real change sort of occurs. And I think we all run the risk, and I like a new shiny ball as much as anybody else.
yeah, no, I have that problem too.
of just remembering that shiny ball has one real purpose only, and that's to help galvanize people's imagination. It's the how we do it. And the how we treat each other, and our patience for each other, that's where the long-term change comes from. Okay. And that's where the hope comes from, and that's the street you want to live on, and the people that you want to work with. And I wouldn't underestimate the value of day-to-day little things. Don't email the chap in your office. Just get up and walk over.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, Peter, I want to end this podcast today just by saying, you know, thank you for your insights. And I mean, you come from a lens that I understand completely, but it's always good to have an opinion on, you know, the frustration that exists in the social enterprise space. So I do appreciate that. And I really just want to say, you know, thanks for being with me here today.
Well, thank you very much. That was enormously fun. As I said, these are important conversations. I appreciate the fact that you're out there hosting them.